You're listening to Culture Exchange, a podcast out of Clark University's International Development, Community, and Environment Department. My name is Jackie Daniel, and I'll be one of your hosts today. I'm joined by my fellow classmate, Jennifer Hernandez, and Yen and I are both first-year graduate students in Clark's International Development and Social Change program. This is our first podcast, and before we get started, I'd like to give you, our listeners, some background information about the genesis of this project. When I first came to Clark in fall of 2012, I was really impressed with the cosmopolitan character of the student body. Almost half of the students in the IDC department are international, and among our domestic students, we also have many people who really have had a significant amount of time living and working abroad. So out of this group emerges this incredible richness of experiences, of cultures, and of histories. And we're able to share that with each other in class and at social events, certainly through the many, many potlucks that we have on and off campus. But, you know, there's always more to share, and there are more people to share it with. Most of us are so focused with school that we tend to stay within the Clark bubble, within the confines of the university. But we're also situated within this very interesting community here in Worcester. And so taking this whole situation, I thought, okay, how can we connect more to each other, but also how can we connect with the wider community that we're in? So I initially had the idea of a live radio show where I could invite people from the department onto the show to bring some music with them. We could do some interviewing, talk about music, talk about where they come from, and kind of learn something new. I think that music, like food, like many other things, is very evocative of time and place, and so I thought it could be a good entry point into someone else's experiences or cultural heritage. The idea of a podcast developed after discussions with Yen, who is really the technical brains behind this project. This is a format that's much more feasible given the constraints of our lives as students, and so we're going to try it out and we're going to see where it goes. So this show is called Culture Exchange. It's a platform for IDC students to share cultures, to find out where we've come from and where we're going. As a full disclaimer, we are learning as we go along, so this project is certainly, like most things, a work in progress, but we really do hope that you enjoy it. And so without further ado, we are going to start with our first ever Culture Exchange podcast, and today we have an interview with the lovely Neha Ray.
Hi, this is Neha, and I'm from Nepal. I'm a first-year graduate student in IDC department. So I'm from Nepal. My family is originally from Tansin Palpa, which is about 200 miles away from the capital. But I was raised in Kathmandu and some part in a village called Gorsadi, which is in southern part of the country.
Okay, thanks, Neha, and thank you for volunteering to be our guinea pig, our first guest on the show. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
So, Neha, how long have you been living in the U.S.?
This is my sixth year, but every day I still feel like this is my first day. But 6 years, yes.
Well, why does every day feel like your first day?
Because there's so much of culture shock that I experience on a daily basis. And even though I've made a lot of friends and family here, I still go through homesickness, you know, often, sometimes a little too much.
Yeah.
But I still feel very foreign.
Okay. What, you said something about culture shock. What, do you remember 6 years ago, I know you did your undergrad here, right?
Mm-hmm.
What were some of the things that still stick out to you, some of the culture shocks that you went through in the beginning, or maybe still go through today?
One experience that I think I'll never forget is the first day I arrived here. I arrived really late at night, and the next day my school took us to Walmart, you know, just in case we needed daily whatever we needed. And so I go to Walmart, and then I see in the dairy, like, food product department or the section, I see all these fruits with big labels. And the oranges looked bigger, all the fruits looked abnormally bigger, and they had labels, and I freaked out. Like, I was in Walmart not knowing where I was, because the idea of, I don't know, it just didn't look natural to me. And I wasn't used to, maybe that has changed in Nepal now, but back then when I was growing up, you don't really see fruits with labels or in plastics. Like, we buy fresh fruits. So that really, really freaked me out. And that night, I remember calling my mom, and I was like, where am I? Like, what is this? So that was my first culture shock.
Yeah. What would be, like, the Walmart equivalent in Nepal? And not that every American goes to Walmart to buy fruit, but...
Walmart, I don't know. I've heard that things have changed a lot, and it's been really long since I was back home, but my family, at least, we still buy fresh fruits. Every evening we have farmers markets, every evening. So, you know, when it's time for dinner, almost time for dinner, family members, whoever wants to, we go out, take a short evening walk, and buy whatever fruits or vegetables we want to cook that night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, food is a big thing, I think. Food is a really big thing when you're living somewhere that's not where you're from.
It is. As much as I love a lot of things about this country, food is one thing I feel like I can never get used to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. We were talking about cross-cultural experiences earlier, and something I think a lot of people say is that when you're living abroad, you really learn as much about where you're from
mm-hmm.
as where you're living. So does that sentiment resonate with you?
Oh, yes. I agree with that 100%. And talking about food and that, I remember growing up, I was very picky. I was a picky eater. You know, mm-hmm. my parents cooked every day. My cousins cooked. Everybody cooked. And I was still very picky, and I complained about it. And my mom used to always tell me, you know, one day you're going to have nothing to eat, and you're going to miss home, all that. And I'm living that right now. Like, I've realized that I'm never, ever going to complain about food,
mm-hmm.
Be grateful about whatever food I get. And, yeah, I just miss the aspect of cooking, like cooking home-cooked food and eating with your whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Little things that I used to take for granted now seem almost like a privilege. I mean, they are a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a big realization that I'm living through right now.
Yeah. How is that? Is that affecting how you're... I mean, do you think that will affect how you live for the rest of the time that you're here in the States?
Definitely. I think, I don't know, I've grown to love food and just the tradition or like culture of eating in community. I mean, right now it's not possible, but whenever, you know, grad school work gives me a little bit of break, I think my daily lifestyle will involve eating with friends
mm-hmm.
and cooking with each other and sharing food, because that's, you know, that's like sharing your culture, that's sharing part of your home. And I love that IDC and all of us do this. Like, we have potlucks, and that's one of my favorite things about our group of IDC students.
Yeah, well, we do have a lot of potlucks.
Yep.
So if you were to bring your, like, the quintessential Nepali dish
mm-hmm.
that you love the most
mm-hmm.
to a potluck, I don't know if you can make it here, but what would it be in an ideal world?
I can't make anything. I can't cook. But, which is sad because I love food. But my favorite Nepali food would be momo.
What's momo?
Momo should be a national food of Nepal, but sadly it isn't. Even growing up, I remember people going to, you know, we hardly go to fast food or restaurants, but whenever, even when people used to go to restaurants, you know, the waiter or the waitress brings you the menu and you sit and then you go through like 5 minutes of trying to check out what's in the menu. And in the end, everybody ends up ordering momo. So we Nepalis love momo. But momo is basically like dumplings.
Mm-hmm.
You have like chicken or turkey or whatever meat you want to eat. It's like dumpling, but the meat is flavored with a lot of spices, like South Asian spices. And then you have a sauce, like a tomato-based sauce, which also is very spicy, full of different chili. And then we have vegetarian version of it, which is, you know, mixed with vegetables, but that's fake. It's fake momo. But yeah, momo is basically, it represents Nepali food.
Is it steamed or fried?
It's steamed.
I'm really curious. It sounds so good.
It is good. It is steamed, but then you make a lot of it, and it's part of the reason why I think Nepalese love momo is it tastes good, but also because the process of making it, it's a fun process. Mm-hmm. And you can never make it alone. Mm-hmm. You'll require a group of people to make it. And you make so much that, you know, you have leftover and next day you fry it. Uh-huh. And then eat it.
Oh, must be even better the second day.
It's maybe making me hungry now. It's
making me hungry. That kind of collective, or the kind of making food together as a family, mm-hmm. and doing that, I think that that's something a lot of people miss living here. Yep. I mean, certainly as students, it's hard to to do that every day and to have, you know, elaborate home-cooked meals. But maybe someday we'll all get together and make momo.
Yes, for sure.
Momo. Okay. Cool. So, okay, food is something then. That's a big thing. Are there other things that you miss about Nepal when you're living here in the States?
People. I miss people and just being around people who speak in, you know, speak the same language or who've had similar background or, you know, have inside jokes and little things like that. But just the air, and I can never really explain it properly. There's something different about the air from your home country, and I bet everybody can relate to that. But I don't know, I feel like the sun feels different, the air feels different. You're in that atmosphere, and you're, like, comfortable, and you feel at home. So I miss that. And I don't know how to explain it, but there's a very different how even water feels, or like air, little things. But yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. Air has a different, maybe a different smell, or like a different feeling, humidity or something that you miss.
Yep.
So the air in Worcester isn't exactly like the air in Nepal.
No. So many different ways. No.
It has its own special qualities here, I guess.
I bet one day when I leave Worcester, I'm going to miss this air. Yeah. You know. Yeah. So, yeah. And I miss my family, friends, everything I've left behind. Everything.
You mentioned language, too. Do you find... do you find there's some, do you find, like, speaking English that you communicate in a different way? I mean, I know you do, obviously, by speaking the language, a different language, but can you maybe elaborate on how you miss speaking the language?
Language is... It has been difficult. Like, even though I went to a school where we did study English, there's a difference in difference between just reading or, you know, learning how to do your alphabets versus having to communicate everything in that language. So when I first came here, I didn't expect to have any problem with language because I could read English, but I hadn't really spoken English as much. So that was a huge, huge problem. And just understanding what the other person is saying in English. That is there, and I feel like most people go through that when they first come here. But the other aspect of it is language very much sort of tells you about the culture. So there are so many things that I want to say, but because of how different or limited English is, I can't fully explain that. And a lot of things get lost in translation. So that's been a huge problem. And also, I still think in Nepali. And so, like, by the time I've thought of something and you know, translated it, it's, like, gone. The moment's gone. Mm-hmm. Language continues to be a problem for me.
Have you found, though, since you've been here, that you pick up more or that you adopted more American, like, idioms or expressions that can kind of... I mean, have you ever had a moment where you have, like, that... You learn a new expression and you realize, oh, yeah, that helps me express myself.
Oh, yes, good words and bad words. Yes, but definitely. And it's strange that even though, like I said, I think in Nepali and I feel more comfortable speaking in Nepali, I write in English. Mm-hmm. And over the 6 years, when I try to write in Nepali, I can't quite express. Like, I can't really... The limitation that I find in English while speaking, I find that limitation while trying to write in Nepali.
Mm-hmm. Could it be because you're writing more about feelings, like situations? maybe you're feeling the English language to express what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know when that transition happened with me. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't notice. But yeah, I've picked up a lot of expressions, and you know, when I want to, when I'm emotional, I want to say some things. I use the English version of everything. But yeah. But even with that, I will say that if somebody, you know, like, has to say something very emotional to me, or when I'm trying to say something very emotional in English, the intensity doesn't feel, it's not the same intensity as you know, when I say it in Nepali. Like, I can have somebody use a cuss word in English, and it won't feel like anything to me. But if a Nepali person would, to, you know, say the same word in Nepali, I have to cover my ears. It's, like, too intense. Mm-hmm. Same with, you know, love and stuff mm-hmm. like that. You say, I love you, and it's not as...
It's, like, the way I feel, like, saying... I love you instead of te amo in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
The I love you is kind of dry, like cold. It doesn't say a lot of what I really want to feel. So don't you feel the same way that like expressing love to somebody or hate,
yeah.
sister word, it's not the same doing it in English as it is in Nepali.
Exactly. Not specifically I love you, because I don't know how we would say that in Nepali. But yeah, like the word love itself, you know, love is Maya, or Prem, like it depends. Even the word love has so many different versions and connotations. So it's like not as, it's very fluid. So yeah, but yeah, if some of the words, when I use them in English, it's not as passionate as Nepali words.
And you mentioned that there's no way to say I love you.
In
Nepali, or it doesn't translate.
There is, but I don't remember. Like I don't. Not many people go around saying I love you in Nepali. I think we have very different ways of expressing our love. And if somebody wants to say I love you, they will say I love you. Mm-hmm. You know, the same English I love you.
How do you express it?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Growing up, I never heard my parents say I love you to each other. But there was always that love. So you don't necessarily say it. That's an interesting question. I've never thought about that. I don't know. It's more of action than like saying that you love somebody. Mm. I bet there are words to express that, but then we don't use it as often.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you won't have, like, Valentine's Day
people do.
Cards with I love you all over them.
They will. It'll be English, you know.
It'll be English, though. Yeah.
Globalization.
Songs, either songs or something that say, that express.
Yeah, they'll say, Moti Milai Maya Gorsu, which is I love you.
Okay.
Yeah, songs will have those words, but day-to-day lives, you don't hear people say that.
Okay.
Well, you just brought up music, Ian, and I know that I know that Neha, you wanted to share some music with us.
Yeah. So music, if there's music is something that I extremely like love, almost as much as I love home, back home, Nepal, and one band that I have loved, I don't know if that didn't make sense, you'll have to edit it, but, okay, so my favorite musician is a band called Kutumba, and to me, they represent Nepal, like, that's how Nepal sound to me.
How so?
So these are, like, young boys, who still live in Nepal, born and raised in Nepal, and they're from, I think most of them are from a family of, well, they have musical background. They've studied music, or they have parents or relatives who are musicians. The different thing about them, what makes them different from other musicians from Nepal is the fact that they use very traditional musical instruments. And these are instruments that you don't usually see in the mainstream Nepali music. And I bet if a lot of new kids in kids these days in Kathmandu, if you show them these instruments, they won't even be able to name them, which is very, very sad. But these young, you know, young boys, like, they go back to, or they go to different parts of, rural parts of Nepal, and I feel like they almost soak in that music, and then together always come up with awesome, awesome piece of music. And they're all instrumental.
So what are these traditional instruments?
They use, and I don't even, I honestly can't even name all of them, because they use like a variety of instruments, but they use a lot of madal and sarangi. Sarangi is basically like, I think it's like a mother of violin. It's like violin, but it existed before violins did. So it's like a violin, Nepali violin, and madal is basically like a drum. It's like a small drum. It's almost like tabla. And then we have a lot of bells that we use, different names. And they find creative ways of making music. They're like five or six boys.
Are there lyrics involved? It's just instruments.
It's just instruments, but it's so interesting how even without using a single word, they're able to communicate like a story. When I listen to them, I hear gorgeous piece of music, but also a story, always. And maybe that's what they're trying to communicate or not, but for me, that's how it works.
And so are they, so they're using traditional instruments, but is the sound traditional, or is sound, or are they doing something?
Yeah, sound is traditional too. It's very traditional. It's very, and they do a lot of covers of Nepali popular songs that I grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm.
So once they start playing the music, it's like people automatically, like, they make you want to join and sing because you're familiar with the songs. And it's a very community, very celebration kind of music, and very, very, like, they make music that moves you. Like, I hear them and I can't just stay still. Like, I either want to sing or, like, dance or clap or do something. It's very moving.
Well, I think it would be fun to sing and dance and clap right now, so maybe we should listen to one of their songs.
Yes, Kutumba.
What song have you chosen for us to
today? Instead of choosing one particular song, I wanted to share a live recording of their performance. I had a privilege of attending one of their concerts in Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago, and so I wanted to share that. And the great thing about them, and that this is one of the reasons why they are my favorite band, is though, you know, artists record song in studio, and that's very, it sounds very different from when they play it live to the audience,
mm-hmm.
but they, like, it sounds identical. And that's how you know they're really that talented. Like, they don't need any assistant or, like, the extra, they don't need to record it in studio to make it, you know, to edit it and make it all good. They can do it live. And I love listening to their albums, and I buy all of their albums. But it's almost like a different experience watching them perform. It's not just the music, but to, like, you watch them interact with each other and the joy in their face while they're making this music. It's like, it's just something else. I'm sorry, I get excited talking about them. I love this band. But a lot of times people are performing, you know, singing or sharing their art, but they don't look or they don't feel as excited. Mm-hmm. But these boys just have this, like, look in their face. It's like pure, like, love for music. And the way they interact, the communication and the bond, just, you can feel it. So I wanted to share the live performance.
Okay, great. Well, we definitely encourage our listeners to look up the live performance, but we'll play an audio clip now so we can hear some of this traditional Nepali music that Neha is so excited about. Okay, that was a song by the band Katumba from Nepal. And Neha, what was the name of the song that we just listened to?
I don't think that that piece had a name. It was just, it was a live performance they did in Washington, D.C. last year. 2 years, well, yeah, last year. I don't remember the, I don't think they had a name. I think it was just a...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we found it by searching for a, oh, a live performance. And you're right, I mean, that was live, but the quality was, you know, it was like almost like a recorded track, and you could see really the skill they have as musicians, and those instruments that we saw them playing were just really incredible. Mm-hmm. So I definitely encourage our listeners to get a visual on Katumba. That's Kutumba. Mm-hmm. And you wanted to share another song with us as well?
Yes, the other song is from their album Utsarga, and the song is called Parivartan. And I think they have a video. This is the only video that I know that they have. And Parivartan basically means transition or change. The timing of this video was perfect, you know, for me in terms of how my country, our country was changing, was making this huge transition, government-wise and even, you know, socially, with all the social movements happening within, and also, as you know, personally, my life, like finishing undergrad and then taking a break to live a very adventurous life and then sort of coming back to school again. So personally, it was like a moment of time of transition for me and the country. And as the album cover says, the song was about change in these musicians, Kutumba's personal lives as well. So I just relate to this particular piece a lot. And this is also one of my favorite songs.
Okay, great. Well, we're going to take a listen then to
Parivartan.
Parivartan from the band Kutumba once again. A song with many layers that resonate with you about transition. Mm-hmm. That was another great song from Kutumba, a band from Nepal, and that was their song Parivartan, which means transition. Thank you, Neha, for sharing that with us. It's a great song. And the music video is very interesting as well.
Yes.
I guess, you know, we were running out of time, but if you wanted to say a couple more kind of final words on music and on Nepali music, its importance to you.
It's obvious. I love Nepal and I love music and I love this band because to me they represent music and Nepal in a very, very, very gorgeous way. Kutumba forever. I'm forever a Kutumba fangirl. too excited about them.
You can have fun club here. Kutumba fans here.
Yeah, I'll have to find people. But it's easy to like their music, so yeah. That wouldn't be difficult. Yeah. Yes, I'm thinking of just being their groupie, traveling with them. I don't know, but no, that's just a joke. In case my parents hear this, we'll get in trouble, so that was a joke. But yeah, music, I think it's extremely important for me, also because I think we come from a culture where we have music for everything. We have music for wedding. We have music for, you know, for like birth celebration. We have music for celebration and for like sadness, you know, for happiness, for trees and for rivers and for gods and for people. So I feel like because I was raised in that, I have become somebody who automatically looks for music in my personal situations as well. You know, I'm working on a paper and I need to have a soundtrack, like background music. And if I'm happy, I need that. If I want to wake up early, like, so music is there all the time. It's almost like a necessity to me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's my love for music.
So food and music. That's what I'm taking away from this interview.
Food and music. And music and Nepal, yes.
And Nepal, yeah. You know, we're almost running out of time. I know there's so much more that we could talk about and so much more to discover. But I just kind of to end the show, if you have one more chance to share something with us, something about Nepal with us, what would that thing be?
I think people know, the international community know Nepal for the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the very diverse population and different like languages and art and architecture and mostly for the natural, you know, rivers and mountains and all that. And I'm not saying that those things are less important, but there's more to Nepal than just mountains and rivers, you know. I feel like people is what makes Nepal. Nepali people, it's like very very interesting. We're a very interesting group of people. Very diverse, and we've been through so much, you know, like political transitions, and of course there are a lot of bad things happening, and security-wise, and country, you know, in the process of developing, and all that. But in spite of all that, you go to Nepal and you'll see smile. Like people just have this tendency to welcome everybody, and it's a very relaxed culture, and I like that. You know, when like rest of the world is running after time, and you know, trying to make money, trying to do all that, like you go to Nepal and you'll see like 11 a.m. in a city, you'll see people just like sitting under the sun playing a board game, or like evening 5 o'clock, you'll see people standing around a little fire talking about politics or music. It's just like people spend a lot of time with each other and just to relax and to enjoy, you know, that little fire or the afternoon sun. And I miss that here. Like you don't see that. Like you have to have a holiday to do that. But every day is a holiday and every day is a celebration. And in spite of everything happening, people are just satisfied and happy and just full of love. And I think that's what makes Nepal. There's this like energy in the air. And yes, mountains and rivers have a lot to do with that, but it's mostly because of the people. So yeah. If you go to Nepal, I think you'll never be able to forget the people.
Well, I think you've certainly brought some of that energy with you here to the States. Mm-hmm, that's something that I don't think can leave. I don't think that's something that, you'll lose living here in the States. So we really thank you very much for sharing that with us today.
Thank you for having me here.
It's been a pleasure. Well, we're almost at the end then, so thank you, Neha, so much. Thank you to my co-producer, Yen, who has been the technical brains behind this project so far. And we look forward to exchanging cultures with you again.